7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 28 of Color of Magic. As usual, I am your host, Daquan Watson. And for 28 episodes running, I've managed to keep them right here in tow. How you doing, Brian?
Not getting rid of me that easily.
So, dude, how are you handling isolation in, like, what is it, week 4 of isolation for you guys, or week 5, something like that?
I think so. Week 4, 5, 10, who knows? So,
yeah, I feel you. Like, I was telling somebody the other day, I've genuinely, like, when I'm even doing videos for YouTube, I'm forgetting what day it is sometimes. I literally look at my calendar so I can be like, oh, yeah, today's Tuesday. I'm recording this. Like,
I know. I mean, I remembered we were doing this on Monday, obviously, but I still was trying to make my children do their homework that they haven't set yet, because it's the Easter break for them, kind of. It's all confusing. Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I forgot. Y'all had... Well, it's weird. I guess y'all have now gone through a spring break and an Easter break.
Yeah, so crazy.
Yeah, pretty wild stuff. Anyway, we are lucky because we're not short on magic news during this isolation. There's been plenty to talk about. Though, we're going to push some of that off till next week because it's not necessarily time sensitive. And we're going to make this episode mostly about Ikoria, which is pretty cool because there is some sweet stuff to talk about.
Unleash the beasts.
Yeah, exactly. But we want to talk about what we learned last week. So, Brian, what did you learn?
Well, apparently the XFL is not only dead, but it went bankrupt. You're going full chapter 11.
Really? See, I heard they weren't coming back next season, but I didn't hear it was that
bad. They have hundreds of creditors, including all of the coaches but one, apparently, are owed money. So they cratered.
Oh, wow. That's tough. That is tough.
I don't know whether that one coach got his paycheck first or he just doesn't expect to get his paycheck and that's why he's not suing. I don't know. I don't know what to do with that one guy. I think it's the DC coach that's, for whatever reason, not suing them.
As far as what I learned last week, you know, it was really around content creation. You know, I think there's a lot of tips that are out there as far as, especially when you're talking about building YouTube videos and stuff, you know, which is, I guess, kind of important because a lot of people trying it out now since, you know, they're sitting at home and have a chance to make some stuff. But there's all these things that tell you, oh, you need to post on certain days and you got to be consistent and do this thing. And, you know, you got to find your voice and all this. And like a bunch of that, I don't know, is actually still accurate for a lot of people. I think it's really down to the audience you're speaking to. And I don't think I see that mentioned in many of those videos.
Yeah, because so much of it is, you know, it's not even your subscribers are necessarily watching your content. It's people that are searching for one specific thing. So much of your stuff comes from Google searches, you know, and they're just looking for, like in my case, it's, you know, an Atlanta Falcons theme team. So many people are looking for that one thing. That's the thing they care about, and that's how they find me.
Oh, no, I agree with you. And remember, we've talked about this on a previous show about, you know, these sites give you all access to all your data. Right, like where everything comes from, where your revenue's from, all that stuff. It's like right in front of you. And one of the things I've done is I've really targeted in on the SEO of just like, these are the things people search for on YouTube. These are the things people are doing to try to find you. And that's just had way more, like as I've gone through and changed all my stuff, which by the way, this is, if I want to highlight anything about content creation on YouTube, this is a thing I learned. And I don't know how many of y'all are using it. But the hashtags on YouTube are good stuff. Like, because I'd seen the hashtags before and I didn't really think about it. But I was like, let me mess around with these and see what this is about. And I've actually gotten more video views since I started using the hashtags. So what I do, and here's the thing. If you ever look, I know this is a little bit of a sidetrack from Ikoria, people. I'm sorry. But this is just like nerd, geeky part of me really wants to get into this. But if you're looking at a YouTube video on your phone, the first thing you see under the video are the hashtags. if there are some with the video, right? And then if people click those, it brings up basically like a Google or a YouTube search of the next, I guess, popular videos or whatever that share that hashtag. So I've been using Power Dragon as the first one, because if somebody likes my videos, they can click on that and it just takes them to my other videos. And then I think the second one I use like Magic the Gathering, and I use MTG as the third one for most of them, because you can only have three hashtags.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, if y'all are making any type of content for YouTube and you're not using them, give it a shot. One thing I did discover though, is if you put when you're putting the video in and you put the location that you shot the video, it will override the hashtags. You can have hashtags or the video location. So just want to put that out there. It's good stuff. It's worked for me. So, you know, I think it's awesome.
The more you know. Oh, wait, that's for another. That's how it fixed for another segment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a different segment. Oh, actually, surprise to everybody, we have a guest to help us do card reviews for Ikoria this week. And the interesting thing is, this is probably the earliest we've had a guest hop on in an episode. We are 6 minutes in.
Absolutely.
And we have a guest here. So I want to say this is a fun guest to have, because this is a fellow content creator who's been doing some stuff on YouTube lately, very active on Twitter, and just fun. So why don't we bring Emma Skyward to the show?
Hey guys, how's it going? I'm happy to be here.
I am doing great. I'm glad you are doing well.
So I am, as well as I can for a Monday, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So where are you based out of?
I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I know you guys mentioned I do YouTube and Twitter, but I'm primarily a Twitch streamer, although I am active on YouTube as well, and I mostly make Magic the Gathering Arena content, but I'm super excited that we get to talk about Ikoria today.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's true. I should have mentioned your Twitch stuff, because, I mean, you're over there as much. Actually, it looks like, and that makes sense that you're in California, because a lot of times I see your stream pop up at the same time I'm on. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who gets the like late night snoozers because of the Pacific time.
It's funny, I get a lot of Australians and New Zealanders because of the time I'm on.
I actually do too, now that I think about it. And I suppose, you know, I probably pick up some East Asia as well, and I just may not be aware of it.
You know what's funny too, by the way? It is safe to call them Kiwis. I asked on my stream because I thought that might have been offensive.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like,
don't know, guys. Yeah, I'm like, is it okay if I use the term Kiwis? Because New Zealanders is like a mouthful. And they're like, oh yeah, everybody says Kiwi. I'm like, okay, it's cool.
That's great. Some of my family is Australian and they refer to them as Kiwis. But I was also never sure if it was like appropriate. But yeah, I'm glad exactly. I know.
Yeah, see, I didn't. And that's why I asked like politely, because I'm like, look, I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm just curious. Yeah, you know, so they're great people. Them too.
Being from Mordor, since that's where Lord of the Rings is filmed, and you know,
I'm not sure that Mordorians would be correct. That would be pretty funny, though.
Though, as we did discover, there's apparently a conspiracy that those places don't even exist. So,
oh, Australia, totally fake. Yeah, that's my favorite conspiracy theory. I don't abide by it, but it is my favorite conspiracy theory.
Of all the conspiracy theories I've encountered, that's possibly the weirdest one.
Agree.
Yeah, that one just blows me away. So, Emma, why don't you tell us about kind of like how you started playing Magic and eventually got into content creation?
Yeah, so I actually got into Magic and Magic content creation at exactly the same time. I had been a Twitch streamer prior to playing Magic, and I had an identity crisis because I'm a competitive person and I enjoy playing games at a competitive level, but I can't aim. So that left me with not very many options. So I decided to try something new along the lines of like a, you know, turn-based card game, because it requires absolutely zero aim, but there's a really healthy competitive scene that's been around for a long time that I thought I could be a part of. So I picked up Magic the Gathering. I think the first time I ever played Magic the Gathering, I streamed it. I played on Arena, and pretty much my entire history of playing Magic has been streamed from the beginning up until now. And I was good at it relatively fast, so I felt like I'd made a solid pick, and the community was really welcoming. The Twitch community was great, and I just felt right at home really fast.
That's super awesome. I did not know that. And your situation is kind of interesting because I think you're right. There are some people who still want to do something competitive, but like the gap can be so big in some of those other games. And it was funny because I never considered that those people would look at picking up Magic as an alternative.
Yeah. And I didn't grow up playing video games. It just wasn't really a thing. I'm from the rural South and I'm a girl also. So it wasn't like I got video game consoles as Christmas presents. And my parents are supportive now, but I didn't really start playing video games probably until I was 18 and in college. So I'm sort of missing some of the like reflex skills I think that it takes to be like a competitive FPS gamer. But Magic was something that I felt I could pick up on a mental level as far as grasping it competitively, even now that I'm in my mid-20s.
You mentioned being from the rural South. I gotta ask where from, because we're two Southern country dudes. So
yeah, indeed.
I'm from the middle of nowhere in the middle of Georgia. And I've lived on the West Coast for a while now, but that is where I'm from originally.
Okay. So you're like me. You're from that area, but you don't necessarily sound like you're from that area.
I have hidden my accent. I've buried it. It comes out when I talk to my mom on the phone.
See, I know so many people. Like, I'm the same way. Like, not necessarily with just, like, my mom, but it's like you just get worked up around a certain crowd, and then all of a sudden you're like, who the hell was that?
Right? My friends don't know who I am. If they hear me on the phone with my parents, it's like I'm a different person.
We do a show in North Dakota, and our Texas accents all just get way. Even those of us that don't have Texas accents, all of a sudden start sounding like J.R. Ewing. It's bizarre.
Well, that's cool. Like I said, I had no idea you'd been playing, basically just streaming Magic from day one then, as you learned the game.
And I've only been playing, I started around the time that War of the Spark released. So it's been a little bit over a year now, I think. But as far as my like competitive accomplishments, I think I hit Mythic and Arena my second week of playing Magic. And then I've just been Mythic ever since. And I was quickly signed to an esports team. And then my Twitch performed really well, which was great. And I felt like the opportunity and the community were all there at the perfect junction for me, and I've just been grateful to be a part of it.
Dang, you got on an esports team even that quick. Like, I'm jealous.
It happened really fast, but I'd been streaming on Twitch for about 4.5 years before this happened, so it sort of just felt like the perfect storm of everything like finally coming together for me, which was awesome.
And if you don't mind me asking, like, when they pick you up for the team, are they looking more for your game accomplishments or just the amount of streaming revenue you potentially bring to the team or whatever? Like, how does that generally work out for you?
They're definitely looking for both. I'm a little bit of a unique case. I think esports teams often pick up people based on concurrent viewership and hours streamed. But I also work a full-time job. I'm not a full-time streamer, so I'm sort of in a special spot. I think that they noticed my relatively fast competitive accomplishments combined with my stream picking up at the same time as options for my consideration.
Well, you know, I have to say, it sounds like you're doing a hell of a good job so far for only being a year in.
I impressed myself, and I've just been happy that everyone has been supportive in my journey so far, which has been really cool. The community was there with open arms, I felt, which is more than I can say from some other communities in my experience as a streamer. So I've been really impressed so far.
Maybe off the air, we can swap some streaming stories. There's a few. But I think that makes you more than qualified to talk about cards for this next set, Ikoria.
For sure. I'm excited.
And I will say, so to everybody listening, with the last set, me and Brian tried to do something a little bit different, just pick some categories and talk about the cards from that perspective. And people seem to enjoy that. So we're going to expand that a little bit this time and do something a little different. But since there's three of us, we're each going to pick one card this time for five different categories. And we'll just kind of go in turn order and we'll talk about our card and kind of like why we selected that card for that category. And it's a little more lighthearted, so not all like super serious categories. So we'll start with one of the lighter ones. And Brian, why don't you tell us why you picked what you did for the best artwork in the set category?
I like the luminous brood moth, just because I don't know what the artistic term for it is, but the way you can kind of see the moon, you know, behind the butterfly or the moth, I would call it a butterfly. It's obviously a moth, because the brood moth, and it just makes it look kind of three dimensional almost.
Oh, you mean where it's like kind of iridescent or whatever, where like the moon's kind of shining through it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it kind of gives that perspective, you know, as if it's three-dimensional. I'd love to see something where, like, I don't know, like almost like, you know how Upper Deck would do back in the day with the shiny foil baseball cards, where it does show two images if you flicker it the right way or something.
Oh, like a lenticular type thing. Like you get a Cracker Jack boxes or whatever.
He's using all the good words. I mean, I don't know the word that he busts out with lenticular. Oh, yes. That was what I was looking for. Yeah, probably.
I really like that card, but I like the alt art, the Mothra version of that. But that's also just because I'm a big Godzilla fan, and Mothra is truly the queen. So I think that's a good pick on your part, even though I like the alt one a little bit more.
Like, I have to admit, when I saw that they were doing the Godzilla stuff, and then I saw the brood moth, I was like, man, if this one isn't the Mothra.
Yeah, somebody would have dropped the ball somewhere if that was the Mothra.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So, Emma, what did you pick for the best artwork in Ikoria?
I actually picked a set because I think the alt art for the Triome cards are my favorites. I don't know if you guys have seen these, but they're absolutely beautiful. They're done in this like hyper-colored, almost comic book style.
Oh, yeah.
I think the Savai Triome is one of my favorites. It's this beautiful like orange and red desert scene. They're incredible. I'm obsessed with all of them. I'm probably going to have to collect a set, at least for my EDH deck, if not something else that I can squeeze them into. And I'm excited about the possibility of Triomes as well. And I don't think they're going to see play in Modern, but I hope that at least for some of the more casual formats that they'll slide their way in there.
The cool part about that artwork is in both versions, the artists went out of their way to try to include like all three colors that they represent in each piece.
Yes, I'm really impressed. I even the like Plain Swamp Forest, the Endotha Triome one is beautiful. It's got the purple. It's got a beautiful like river blue swampy background. And then this swarm of yellow butterflies. I'm obsessed. I can't stop looking at them.
Well, mine isn't quite as cool as the lands, but I picked Zerda the Dawn Waker. And I just think it's just like, it's almost like a fiery fox, which is a weird way to describe that. Like, it's like, it's an elemental fox, obviously, but like just the colors they use. And it's just like smoldering almost. Like, it's such a weird concept, but it comes off so cool. And when I see that stuff, I think about like, what was the like cliff notes or the instructions the artist was given? Like, all right, so you're gonna have this elemental fox, but it has to look like it's kind of made out of fire, because a lot of our elementals are fire. But it's not really a fire card. It's gonna be red and white. So do with that what you will, you know. And then this is what came out, which is very cool. And we don't have that many foxes in Magic. So I think that's also one of the reasons I think I was drawn to it a little bit.
Are there really not that many foxes? That surprises me.
Yeah, you would think there'd be a lot more because we have a bunch of just like random other like squirrels and whatever.
Yeah.
But not really.
Yeah, now that I think about it, you're right.
Yeah, no idea why. It's just like one of those creature types that just doesn't really come up or fit in a lot of. We have a lot of hounds.
And a lot of cats.
Yeah, but not many foxes. All right, Brian, so let's move into the next category. And this is the one people are going to want to know about, because I did a stream earlier today, by the way. I did a Taco Bell mukbang while we talked about Ikoria this afternoon. And that was one of the things, is people are like, what do you think the card is nobody's really paying attention to yet, and whatever. So, of course, I told them, well, you can catch it on our podcast on Tuesday. Nice. But...
Cross promotion.
Well, of course, you gotta. What's your most underrated card in this set? And we're defining this as like the card most likely to surprise some people.
Mine is, and again, I just come from somebody that almost never plays blue, but I think Sea Dasher Octopus is something that I think maybe a lot of people are, I mean, I heard a lot of talk about it, but I think it could definitely be interesting. So this has got Mutate, it's got a lot going on. It's got Mutate, Flash, when it deals combat damage, you draw a card, so you're going to attach it to something else and get probably two or three different crazy abilities with this thing. Mutate's just going to be a fun mechanic in general.
You know, I kind of like this pick, dude, because it's also, it mutates for two. That's the thing. So it's really cheap, and you're getting even if you just had to sneak a card through to get the extra card, you know, just putting it on something else, being able to do it for two mana is kind of nice. Emma, what was your card for this category?
So this was actually a really difficult question, and I sort of shopped it around a little bit because, while I've been reviewing all the Ikoria cards, it's really difficult to say what you think is going to be surprising. But the card that I settled on is actually a reprint. It's the reprint of Cathartic Reunion, which originally came out in Kaladesh.
Oh, yeah.
It's the cast this card, discard two cards, draw three. I think it might be the missing piece to blue-red discard with phoenixes in some formats, especially in standard. And I think that there's another card, Riel, the Everwise, which is the legendary creature that I think may also be another piece for blue-red discard that hasn't really, that deck archetype just hasn't really seen standard play in a bit. So I think these two may surprise some people as far as that archetype goes.
That's a good pick, because, I mean, it's so weird to think about. It was only like a year ago that people are like, oh, these Arc-like Phoenix decks are so good. You know, like, now you never see them anymore.
Exactly. I think it's just been missing some pieces that make it standard viable. So I'm hoping that this closes some of the gaps in that.
Yeah, I like that pick. I went with Shovel Bane of Monsters, which, I don't know, it sounds like I just said shovel, but it's shovel, C-H-E-V-I-L-L. It's a death touch, black and a green for a 1/3. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if your opponent controls no permanents with a bounding counter on them, you put a bounding counter on target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls. And then whenever that permanent dies, you get to gain 3 life and draw a card. This card, I think, is just very interesting in the sense of, like, it's a 1/3 death touch, which is already going to be annoying for aggro decks to punch through and deal with. But the fact that you can put it on, you can put a bounty counter on something you're already planning on killing, and then you just get free cards. And I think that's something that's easily overlooked too often. And it's a kind of a, like, it's a body that you can just overlook and be like, this card's nothing. You know, and I don't think this card's necessarily going to be a stud, mind you. I don't think it's going to show up in a whole bunch of decks. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see one or two popular decks within the next 9 months that are probably playing this card. It is legendary, though.
Really impressive mustache.
He does indeed. Yeah, he's rocking like a big chain that's like, I don't even know, like it's some giant scarab thing or something. Like, this dude looks like he's out to get some people.
He's very, like, early 90s. Like, he's got an aesthetic. I'm into it.
Yeah, it's a crazy-looking card. Plus, he's, like, I don't know, guarding some eggs that are about to hatch or something behind him. It's kind of creepy-looking. But, yeah, it's an interesting card.
And a bounty hunter mechanic just seems fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's the thing, too. It's just, I think it's, like, a lot of cards in Ikoria where a bunch of these may go overlooked because they're all doing weird things that we've not done before with a lot of Magic cards.
And Lord, all the counters. They're just the counters for everything.
True. All right, so this next category, and this one's a little easier because we can kind of think more in current space of knowledge we have. Like, we picked a best card for a current deck. So, Brian, what do you got?
I'm thinking Kahira the Orphan Guard for Selesnya because, you know, it boosts cats and beasts and dinosaurs and all these random green and white, green or white creatures or green and white creatures. So that seems like that's got a home already. It I think works in a Selesnya deck or, you know, if you're more of a player like me, just like, hey, look, I put a bunch of cats together. I just play tribal because I have fun playing tribal. And it's a good card for you, too. And you get to start with it because it's a companion. So That's all.
And the art is really cute. I love the art on that card. She has all her little babies.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like the orphan guard. It's literally just like she went around and just swept up all the lost children or whatever. By the way, if you want to see a deck list, I did put something on my YouTube page already with this card, and that deck seems like it'll work, honestly. I'm very impressed.
Excellent. I'm going to go check that out because it seems like it's the thing I'm going to play.
So, Emma, what did you pick for this category?
I think it's a no-brainer auto-include in the, like, Rakdos sacrifice list, or really any sacrifice list that's running around, but it's Serrated Scorpion, the one black 1/2 that essentially has Siphon 2 when it dies. I mean, for one black, what more could you want? It has a big butt, and it's Siphon 2. I think it's just going to automatically go in place of some of the other one drops, maybe in place of Gutter Bones in some situations, or perhaps as an addition to Gutter Bones.
That's a good pick, too. I think one of the things that's interesting about this set is the Sacrifice deck was already pretty good, and there's two or three, probably three, maybe four different cards that could be played in that deck from Ikoria. So I don't even know what they're going to choose to play or where they find room for all of these things.
Yeah, I would also argue that Fiend Artisan has a place in Sacrifice as well. So I think that Sacrifice is going to get some new tasty tools to play with. And it was already good, like you said.
That deck didn't seem like it needed more cards. It got more cards.
It did.
All right, so for mine, I picked Obosh the Prey Piercer. That's also a companion, and all the cards in your deck have to be odd converted mana cost, and then sources with odd converted mana cost deal double damage. And you know, I know people don't want to hear this, but I think Mono Red could be built a different way and have a different tool here. I think it's very possible to play a Mono Red deck that's all ones and threes, you know, and maybe you play like two copies of Scargan Hellkite or something in there. Because the idea of playing a Scargan Hellkite with haste and hitting somebody for 8 in the air is pretty gross for 5 mana. But the other thing I was thinking about too is the set also has some other stuff like Weaponize the Monsters, which is a 1 mana enchantment. And you can sacrifice creature, deal 2 damage, but with this out, you'll deal 4 since it's a 1 mana permanent. So there's a lot of things this card can do for that style of deck if they want to go that route. I mean, it's really strong. And the artwork's super creepy, too.
It is creepy. It has a strange mouth.
Yeah, it's like almost an alien face, but it's got a bunch of like weird mechanical, like Mirrodin spider legs on it or something. It's very, very awkward. But yeah, this card, I would not be surprised if I lose to a deck playing this a few times in the first week or two while I'm figuring the format out. All right, Brian, this one's one that you should enjoy. This is your category. The most fun card to build a deck around.
And for me, I got to go with General's Enforcer because he makes your legendary humans indestructible. And anytime I see make things indestructible, I'm in. These decks often, you know, blow. They either win spectacularly or they blow up spectacularly. Either way, it's been fun for me, really. So I'm already kicking things around in my head. And, you know, the trick I've already noticed is, you know, a lot of legendary cards aren't that great.
Sure. But, you know, it's funny you say that because I hadn't thought about it. But there may be room for something like this in like Modern or Pioneer when you're wanting to play extra copies of like Thalia and stuff like that,
yeah,
that are you'd be pretty easy to protect. So all right, that's an interesting pick. What do you got, Emma?
So you actually stole my answer. I was gonna say General Cujo. I play 5 color humans in Modern. That is my Modern deck of choice, and I want nothing more than to play humans in Standard as well. So I think that General Cujo as the 3-drop combined with General's Enforcer as the 2-drop in Orzhov humans, you could consider maybe expanding it into Mardu humans or maybe even Abzan humans. If you're playing Historic, then you could get into like Reliquary Knight territory, which could be really interesting. for both. So I'm definitely going to take General's Enforcer and General Kudrow straight to brew and try to make humans work in every single format, because that's my pet tribe.
It's so funny that we were all on the same page, because I have a humans deck that launches on Tuesday on my YouTube
page. I will launch that immediately. I am so excited.
It's a Mardu humans list. It's so funny.
They got a lot of toys this set.
Yeah, they did. They got a lot.
I'm excited to take it straight to modern. I think that some of these pieces are going to definitely be sideboard pieces for my modern deck, and some of them might even see some mainboard play. I'll have to see how it goes.
All right, so I know I'm going to catch hell on my stream. Being a Gruul player who's very much been hating Aether Gust's life lately. But the build around that's probably going to be really fun for people is Shark Typhoon.
And it's a Shark Typhoon.
I know. I did want to say, well, one, it's a Sharknado. So, I mean, there's that, right? And when you cycle it, you can also just get creature, which is cool because you can play four copies of it and it doesn't really hurt you to have the extra copies. So that's also pretty nice just to have available. I mean, you can make a 3/3 or a 4/4 shark or whatever while you're getting the mana to play the full cost to actually get it into play. Or if you just want to surprise your opponent with the card. But once it's in play, I mean, getting Impfy sharks that are anywhere from 2 to 4/4, like, it's going to be pretty tough to punch through once that's on the table. So I'm sure people are going to enjoy that card quite a bit. I don't even know. Maybe it's even like a 1 or 2 of just in normal control decks as another win condition, which would be weird because you'd be able to win with potentially no creatures in the deck and just make sharks out of your Typhoon. But it's a thing that can happen, I guess.
And I want the next 2 or 3 sets in a row, I have like another Shark Typhoon, like sci-fi, or just gets like Shark Typhoon 6 until it's gotten really stupid, or even more stupid than it was when it starts.
Man, I have to admit, like, I am not proud of that pick, because I am going to hate playing against this card, but I know some people are going to love it. Not a lot to be done about it, unfortunately. All right, so this is the fun one. This is our last category. What is our just favorite overall card in the set? So, Brian, what'd you pick?
I went with Kogla the Titan Ape because it's such a great King Kong reference. And, I mean, it's thematic because he gets to pick up a human creature and essentially, I guess, kidnap them to become indestructible. It's just awesome. I love the theme. I think, and again, a big indestructible beast in green is going to have all kinds of applications, I'm imagining.
I have to say, you bring up a good point. I think they hit the flavor for the set very well. I think anybody who doesn't even play a lot of Magic could very easily look at the set, and if you open 2 or 3 packs, you would totally understand the set and have a feel for it through just reading through those cards you have in your hand. And that's really awesome. Emma, what did you pick?
It's a card that I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to build around, but I really like it. I like the Winota, Joiner of the Forces, the Boros legendary human creature, basically just because she's a goth queen and I'm into it. I'm not sure if I can brew a deck around her ability. It's whenever a non-human creature attacks, look at the top 6 cards. You may put a human creature card onto the battlefield tapped and attacking, and it gains indestructible until end of turn. That seems like a lot of fun if I can make it work, but I really like the art and I like the theming, and I'm excited that it's just a cool Boros legendary creature.
I will tell you right now, the card's really cool and I have a list for you.
Yes, give it to me. I'm ready. I have not thought of a decent brew around it yet, but I am excited.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. There are some wild things that card's going to allow you to do.
Yeah, and the character, I believe she features on another card in the set, and I just really like the art, so it's just been a favorite for me.
Cool. Mine, I think anybody who knows me probably knew what I was going to pick before this even started, but Vivian Monster's Advocate. I just wouldn't feel right if I didn't pick that card. Like, it's 5 mana, so 3 and 2 green. It's 3 loyalty, and she has 2 static abilities in lieu of, I guess, one of her regular activated abilities. So you can look at the top card of your library at any time, and then you can also play creature spells from the top of your library, which is very cool. The thing that's awesome about this card is that for plus one loyalty, you get a 3/3 creature, which you also get to choose if it gets to have vigilance, reach, or trample. So it's rare that a planeswalker gets to defend itself with a creature really bigger than like a 2/2. You know, we haven't seen that in quite a while, except for, I don't know, maybe like, feels like 10 years ago, there was a 4-mana Garrick that made 3/3 beasts. But even then, they were just generic 3/3 beasts. They didn't have any of these abilities on them. And then the -2 ability is whenever you play a creature spell, you can search your library for another creature that costs less than that creature. So you get to really, it's almost like a really good catch-up mechanic for those aggro decks that were kind of feeling a little beat down by all the board sweepers and everything else. Like, this is a thing that you don't have to dedicate anything else to the board. You can just make 3/3s every turn. And then once they sweep the board, you're like, hey, cool, -2. I'm going to play this, I don't know, Questing Beast and go get a Gruul Spellbreaker and hit you for 7. So, yeah, I am all about Vivian right now. I think this card's super duper awesome.
It'll be a nice buff to like big green aggro and some of the decks that haven't seen play for a little while due to, like you said, the board sweeper meta.
Yeah, I think it's really, really neat. I think I don't know so much about Narset. I haven't really looked at building anything with Narset yet, but Luca and Vivian both have already lended themselves to some very cool deck ideas. So yeah, those are our cards. And actually, you know what else is cool? None of us pick the same cards.
I guess we all have our own aesthetic as well.
Yeah, we all picked 15 different cards. That's pretty cool. Because I was thinking, all right, we'll probably cover like 11 or 12 different cards. There'll be a little overlap somewhere. But no, everybody actually picked something. And that's the thing, too. So the listeners know, like, we were getting to know everybody's cards live. Like, we all went, did our own homework, and then just brought it to the show. So it's kind of cool whenever that happens and works out like that. So the listeners got max opinions on 15 different cards. So with that out of the way, we do have our normal order of business, because anytime we have a guest on, we like to invite the guest to the dinner table so we can talk about the serious stuff.
Yay, serious stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We got to do it. We got to do it. Wouldn't be right. If we have you over, we got to invite you to dinner.
Perfect.
So one of the things we had, actually, let me start from the beginning. One of the reasons we even got Emma on the show is Brian had seen, we'll call it an incident that had gone down and was like, hey, you might want to check her out, you know, see if she wants to come on and talk about this thing. I was like, cool. I reached out. Emma responded. We worked it out and we are where we are now. So I want to kind of give Emma the floor to talk about the situation, and then we'll kind of dive in from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the reason you guys reached out to me mainly was because I made a tweet about how I had, I reached a large milestone on Instagram, and I post a lot of Magic content on my Instagram. Everything is bordered under my same brand name. So like my Twitch, my Instagram, my Twitter, it's all about, you know, who I am as a streamer and as a Magic player. So I had a big milestone and I was deciding to host a giveaway just as something to give back. And for the first time, I decided to post in Facebook groups, Magic the Gathering Facebook groups, just to let people know about the giveaway. And the reaction was really not what I had expected, given my overwhelmingly positive experience in the Magic community. And while there were a lot of positive comments, there were a lot of really negative things as well. And so I had just made a tweet about how surprisingly negative the experience was. And then you guys reached out to me. And I can go into specifics as well. Just let me, you guys have to lead me on how you want me to talk about it.
I just want to say, like, what was it that, well, let's start at the beginning. Like, what was it that you were giving away to start with?
So I was giving away a Theros bundle sponsored by one of my sponsors, which is TCG Player, and a custom altar of the winner's choice done by the really talented Wolf Altars. So she was going to work with them to create whatever they wanted on a card. So it's a pretty good value as far as giveaway goes. And like I do for all of my Instagram posts, I took a photo of myself with one of my magic folders. I think it was my blue rare folder, and I have something like 7 or 8 signed Deceiver Exarchs, which are a pretty awesome card. So I just had the binder flipped open to that page. Because in my experience, photos with faces perform significantly better as Makes just sense. A general marketing tool. And, you know, I am the face of my brand. So it's just something I almost always do is include myself in my images, just like I do in my stream.
So what was the negativity? Because, I mean, these sound like reasonable prizes to give away. So where was the negativity coming from on your posts?
I think most of the negativity just came from the fact that people were maybe surprised or just not accustomed to seeing people like me, or maybe just women in general, in that kind of space. So I got a ton of like angry reacts and angry comments like, do you even play magic? Or like, this girl is a fake, or like, she's just photoshopped these cards into this picture. It's not real. Or
why would you know, like that? People...
Yeah, I got a lot of like people rating how bangable I am instead of like any sort of relevant content, which was surprising. And I posted in 2 different Facebook groups, and both of them had about the same ratio of like positive to negative comments. And there were a lot of positive comments, and the moderators in both groups were extremely helpful in trying to keep the level down. And I understand that there can be a lot of negativity on posts in general, but it was definitely like another kind of, I guess, like either gender-based or just like sex-related anxiety that I had to go through because of, you know, some of the comments that happened. There's just a lot of comments. I saved all of them because actually the partner influencer manager for Wizards of the Coast reached out to me after this as well, asking me if I wanted to send some of the like really upsetting ones to Wizards for review, which isn't, it's nice that that is an option for the future. Like, I didn't know that that was something I could even do. But I did keep track of all of them in case I want to go that route.
You know, I think this comes back to some stuff we've mentioned on the show in the past, that like the one thing I want people to do, especially dudes in this scenario, because that's, you know, causing the problem here, is just think about like, what is the point of what you're saying? Like, you're saying like somebody's like, oh, she probably photoshopped those magic cards into the picture.
That was my favorite conspiracy theory of the day. I was like, please tell me more about how I photoshopped all of these magic cards into my beautiful binder. I was very interested in that comment.
But here's the thing, though. It's kind of like those conspiracy theories that we're like, okay, but what's the point, right? Like, why would you take the time to Photoshop magic cards into a picture to just promote a giveaway of magic things? Like, right. What's the upside?
Exactly. And I think the general concept that it's like maybe people just expect magic players to not have a public persona, but that's truly not the case. When you think of like pro players, almost all of them come with their own public image, and you tend to, for the most part, like know what they look like from coverage and things like that. So the idea that just because I promote myself along with my playing and my content shouldn't, like, people think that shouldn't happen, which is a little bit strange because that's always been the case.
Oh, the truth is, I would guarantee you several of those people who are giving you crap wouldn't have done the same to a guy.
I'm inclined to mostly feel the same way.
I mean, I can tell you, we were, and I may have mentioned this a few episodes back, but there was an event when I was doing some work with Wizards. We were at PAX Unplugged. That's what it was. And there were some, we had done a speaking engagement, and then there were some Magic fans who just wanted to play some games with people who work at Wizards, because that happens. So yeah. We're like, cool, we're going over to set up a table so we can get a couple of groups of Commander started. And this player, out of the blue, and I won't mention her name just to call her out, but one of the women that was with us, wearing just a normal like zip-up Magic hoodie sort of thing. He runs over, intercepts her, stands in her way, and is like, I bet you don't even know about Nicol Bolas.
Oh, my God.
Like, what? I mean, like, what the hell, dude? Like, no, now the kicker to the whole thing is she was one of the people that did some of the, like, writing and whatever at the time. So it's like she knew more than enough about Nicol Bolas.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, she spouts off something and kind of gives the dude the side eye or whatever. And he, like, scurries off. But, like, what's the point of that interaction?
Right. I can't imagine that if even, you know, like, a conventionally attractive guy posted a photo with magic cards that he would get comments that say, like, close your legs.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. That absolutely
it's just not going to happen. It's just it's a different world. But on the bright side, while my experience in, like, Facebook groups has been a hard mix of positive and negative, for the most part, my experience, like, playing Magic in person, which wasn't something that I started out doing because I started on Arena, I had to sort of work up to playing paper Magic, and I was super nervous at first, but my experience playing in paper has actually been really welcoming. So I am grateful that most of the negativity is hidden behind some online anonymity and shield, and that for the most part, in person, people are super welcoming.
That's good, at least. I mean, that'd be even worse if they were going to be harsh in person.
I do not know if I could handle playing paper if that were the case. But fortunately, it is not from my experience so far.
Thankfully, nobody has cut you off in the hallway and asked you if you know who Nicol Bolas is. I can't believe human beings sometimes. It's just,
dude, right? That's a true story. I swear to God.
I know. I can absolutely believe it.
And man, I don't know. Like I'm not going to go there anymore. But one of the things, really, and I want to say to people, to the listeners, is that the reason these types of interactions are bad are that it limits the growth of the game. When you're talking about getting more sponsors, having more people to play with, like Wizards just having access to more money to create more awesome things that we want or whatever, like, every one of those people you push away slows down that growth. And what happens a lot of times, and it's one of the popular business understandings, is that people are going to complain more about a negative experience than they're going to go talk about a positive experience.
It is true. So
if the average person encounters a situation like you did, Emma, they're just going to be like, you know what? No, Magic players are terrible. You know, the company doesn't care, blah, blah. It becomes this whole crazy narrative that maybe even doesn't exist because two or three people came out and said something stupid to somebody. And exactly. It takes a long time to win that player back over. Like when I had my store, I had people who would come in with a friend and they were like, oh man, your store is completely different than the other store I went to, or your players are so much nicer or whatever. But the only reason that person came in was because they happened to know somebody who was already a customer of ours. Otherwise, they had already sworn off going to play at a game store ever. Yeah, so those effects can be much more devastating than I think people give credit to. And it's easy to go like, I'm going to be a smartass and make fun of this person. Or I'm going to look really funny by making this stupid comment. But man, the effects of that are way bigger than you think they are. Way bigger.
It's true. And especially when you're growing a diverse audience. I mean, Magic has, since I started, been pretty much my life for like a year. and I'm very resilient. And it's going to take a lot more than some people on the internet being mean to me for me to stop playing Magic. But imagine like a new player in that situation, especially, you know, women who are trying out Magic for the first time, if they're encountered with something like that, because maybe they started like I did through Arena. And they're approaching it purely from an online perspective. And if that's the first sort of reaction they get back from it, I can imagine that would be difficult.
Yeah, you know, you're a little bit hardened in the forge from already being around in some of the video gamers.
Yes. I also work full time in the video game industry, so I get the full like backlash from both perspectives.
Wow. Oh man. Then you felt it then.
Million horror story, you can imagine.
Oh, yes.
And the other thing you brought up, which I think is interesting, too, is I don't think that the average player, actually really gamer in general, really understands how much somebody that's in one of the less represented groups has to think about their brand or where you can and can't use your face or your image and how that's going to come off. Like, that's not an automatic decision.
No. And I think that some people even refrain from like using their image. I know some women who are content creators refrain from like using a cam or things like that, just out of fear of repercussion.
No, that makes total sense. I mean, even on my YouTube channel, I've literally been following, okay, I used my face on these four or five thumbnails and they perform this way. I didn't use my face on these thumbnails and they perform this way. So like, all right, I guess I won't unless it's on this type of thing because these perform better than these. Even though I know the content is better in the other ones, just like, cool, then this is just what we're doing.
Right. It's metrics to track along with everything else as well. And it's a business perspective as well. If you've made your image part of your business and your brand, then even if you do get backlash like I did, it's still not something I'm going to back away from. Like, oh, that having makes a part of my sense. Brand.
Yeah. I mean, it's how you're making your money and how you're working to make a living. So, I mean, you got to do what's best for you for sure. But yeah, I would say more often than not, anytime somebody's going to make any type of comment like that, just think about what's your preferred outcome? Like, why are you even making that comment?
Yeah, it seems extra time consuming, in my opinion, sometimes to like go out of your way to say something insensitive when like being happy and nice about things is free.
Yeah. And I've said this before on the show, but assuming you are a heterosexual male, it should be in your best interest to encourage other women to want to participate in your hobby.
Exactly.
So it increases the odds of you finding a mate that is into the things you're into. Like, why would you not want that?
I've said that before as well. It seems like sometimes it's the same people who wonder why they can't find a girlfriend who plays magic that actively sort of bully women out of magic. It seems like a big catch 22 to me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And people talk. I mean, you post something, people commit that to memory. They may not say anything to you, but somebody's probably told their friend, or like, oh yeah, you probably don't want that guy in our group because of this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I know I for sure have had people mentioned and I was like, wait, isn't that the dude that did this thing? And they're like, oh yeah, but I was like, nah, I'm good.
On the bright and positive side for me, especially, you know, like I said, coming to magic with the intention of trying to be a competitor and going at it from that angle, there were a lot of like positive women role models already in place in especially the competitive magic scene as well, which is really impressive and progressive as far as esports goes. So I've been really grateful that the scene is already relatively friendly.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because again, you were coming in, you know, specifically to kind of the esports side of Magic and getting to see that in comparison to other gaming communities. And we've talked a lot about how that bit of representation, whether it's for women, trans, people of color, you know, whatever, like can have a bit of an impact on who's going to want to play the game or not when they already see that. So it's cool that that's been, I guess, proven positive and been something that you've been able to latch onto a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely made me feel more at home and welcome. And while I'm definitely not like the highest tier competitor by any means, and I'm still learning as much as anyone involved in the magic hobby, seeing so many women and just diverse people in high tiers of play is really encouraging.
Man, that's awesome. Like, it's always great when those efforts are made, but even better whenever they're rewarded for saying like, hey, see, we have these people specifically because we did this thing.
Yeah, I think Wizards really encourages it as well. And while, you know, there may be controversy around, you know, Wizards' chances to display diverse people, I think that it really makes an impact on new players joining. You get the audience that you set up for, essentially.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, yeah, this was a kind of a interesting episode. We talked a lot about Ikoria stuff. We got into some personal things. And hopefully we straighten some people out today. But yeah, let's wrap things.
We'll be here until we don't feel the need to be here, and that doesn't sound like happening anytime soon.
Well, that's true. We still got a ways to go. So, Brian, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you on social media?
Okay, I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and our family channel is Alan's Ever After on YouTube.
And Emma, how can they find you?
I am Emma Skyward on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, pretty much any social media that exists. You can find me under Emma Skyward. And I just wanted to say thank you guys for having me on today. I really appreciated and enjoyed it.
Oh, no problem. I'm glad you took time to come hang out with us.
Absolutely.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn on most social platforms. And you can find me streaming on Twitch on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. And don't forget to hit us up for the streamer early access stuff, because Emma's also participating in that, I think, right?
Yes, I will be. Yeah. I will probably be on. Does it go until Thursday?
No. Well, Thursday morning, technically. I think like 6 a.m. Our time or something.
Wednesday it is.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be most of the day Wednesday. I'll be doing two sessions on Wednesday. I'm going to do 12 to 5 and 7 to midnight. So it's going to be a pretty long day for me. And as usual, hit up our YouTube and other things, because we have a lot of content happening over there. All three of us have things over there now. So overall, this was a great show. I want to thank Emma again for coming and hanging out with us. And for all of you, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Man, it is a long day for me today. We will see y'all next time. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.